That's why this it's not so much monastic as tov.
We need more desire.
We need more desire to come to our mind. What's the meaning of the desire to come to Israel is brought down great panacea. People were more soft, healthy, it's all good. So we are in Masechet Sanhedrin. We're now all the way up to Daf Lamed, page 30. Oh, Hashem, Shabbat Aveda, I'm looking after you. So what are we talking about? So yesterday we talked about, where are we? So in the sugya dealing with 30a, dealing with witnesses. When do we believe witnesses? When are they validly appointed? When do we ignore their testimony? When do we consider what they said klum? When do we accept what they said, but only if the litigant doesn't argue? All of these are important things to know if you're running a court. So these are the laws that apply. And so we saw the two witnesses by themselves are not enough unless they've been appointed witnesses. We saw that two witnesses cannot, they're not permitted to write a note to create a lien, to create an additional obligation on the debtor, unless there's been a kinyan, or there's a three-man baked in, and a three-man baked in that's been validly appointed, depending on which opinion you say you need to appoint them. You just gather them together, you actually tell them that these are the judges, or you formally create a seat of the baked in and invite the summons, the witnesses. So depending on which, how far you need to go, you can also do it via a baked in, three-man baked in. They can also amount to, they can also permitted to write a note, to write, create that additional obligation. And we saw yesterday there's a difference between metaltalin and karka, between movable property and land. In the case of movable property, we said the witnesses are not allowed to write a note unless they've been specifically asked to do so. But in the case of property, two witnesses who validly heard the transaction, so to speak, the agreement of the transaction, the admittance that, hey, this land belongs to you. Yes, it does, I agree. So a person who heard, two people who heard that, they are allowed to write a note in the case of land because there's no further collection necessary. There's nothing else to do. They're not creating a new obligation. They're just merely recording the existing obligation. Whereas in the case of the metaltalin, there is still a step left, which is to hand over the goods, hand over the money. And therefore, the witnesses, when they write the note, they're not simply recording the existing set of circumstances. They're effectively creating new obligation. But in the case of land, they're not creating a new obligation because the land doesn't need transfer. The land is the land. The land belongs to who it belongs to. And therefore, we say that in the case of land, they can write a note, even though they weren't specifically asked to do so, because they haven't created a new obligation. They were merely recording the existing facts that they heard. Someone says it belongs to you, and he said yes, so now we're just recording that fact. We're not. In the case of metaltalin, it has to be handed over, and it hasn't yet been handed over, so therefore we can't write the note. That's what we learned yesterday. Next, we learned about what happens. Do we have a presumption of validity? So Reish Lakish says it's presumed, he says, in the case of witnesses. Witnesses do not sign, he said, there's a hazaka, that witnesses do not sign on a document unless the person they're signing on behalf of, the litigant, the baladet, whoever it is a gadol. He's over the age. We assume he's over the age. We don't have any proof, right or left, yes or no, but there's a hazaka that he's over the age. Reish Lakish says no witness would sign on a document for a 10-year-old. Just wouldn't do it. So if you have evidence one way or the other. Fine, the evidence stands, but in the absence of evidence, there's a hazaka that for sure he was overage at the time, because no witness would sign a document for someone who was underage.
But that also means that he's also qualified, meaning he's not he's mentally competent, he's not a woman, he's not a slave.
It doesn't mean that, but the Gemara wants to use, we only have that statement of Reish Lakish, the chazaka according to Reish Lakish. He says it applies that in the case of giving us a chazaka that the person was a gadol, was over the age at the time he signed it. But the Gemara then wants to say, can we use that for other things? So the Gemara then tried to bring that in to suggest that in the case of a two-man Beit Din, that we can also assume there was actually three men. What's the case? The case is we have a document that was signed with the wording of the court. It was signed in the Lashon of the Beit Din, but only two names were signed on the bottom. And if it was really the Lashon on the Beit Din, then you need three, because three should have been on the Beit Din. So what do we understand from this document? Do we understand it really was a Beit Din, and just one of them died before he got to sign? He made a valid Beit Din. Otherwise, do we assume that two witnesses, just like two witnesses wouldn't sign something that was improper for a 10-year-old? So two witnesses, we can also assume from the same logic, would not sign a court document if there was only two of them. They know you need three men on a Beit Din. So do we follow Reish Lakish's logic and say, this must be a good document? Because although only two signed, for sure there were three at the time that they had the Beit Din, and one of them must have died. We assume that must have been and happened, because no two people are going to sign a document as if they were a Beit Din when they know for sure they weren't. Right, we tested that because we saw the courts of, where the courts were, the courts of Rav Huna, the courts of Rav Papi, checked that their scribes knew the law, and they said, yeah, we do know the law.
But also we covered earlier that the witnesses wouldn't sign alone, they would wait until everyone's there so they know who the witnesses were.
No. When did we cover that?
This is way, way back.
Say it again slowly. The witnesses wouldn't
the
sign
witnesses
alone.
The witnesses wouldn't sign individually until they knew who the other witnesses were.
Ah, yafet. Okay. Nahon. So, okay, I agree with that statement. Therefore, what are you trying to bring
so
with that?
So, therefore, if it's saying that a court, they assume with this that they knew that there were three witnesses, three valid witnesses.
Ah, so they wouldn't...
Or three valid judges.
They should have... Okay, so that strengthens the argument. You're supporting the argument. Yeah, it's not kasha. You're saying this in order to contradict, you're saying this in order to support.
In order to support that someone died.
Right, okay, yeah, fair, okay, I can accept that. That they wouldn't have signed individually, is what you're saying. So they would have signed together, and therefore, I'm not sure it supports or contradicts either way. They would have signed together, the two of them, and not individually, one by one. I'm not sure that we can therefore draw a positive or negative support. I'm not, unless you can tell me. Come back with an argument.
No, my assumption is assuming it's a Beis Din.
Yeah.
Because they're saying the court.
Yeah.
And assuming that they wouldn't sign individually until everyone's together, or at least they've had court, so they know who's there. If someone dies, well, they know the person was there, but he died.
Okay, although I can bring you a difference between your case and this case. The difference in the original case is that we're talking about witnesses, meaning why is the difference between witnesses and the court? Because in the case of witnesses, you don't know who the other witness is, so you don't sign until you know who he is. But in our case, if we're talking about a court, you do know who your other judges were on the court.
That's my point.
No, you're not listening. So you do know who they were. Therefore, when you come to sign the document afterwards, after you've made the judgment, you're not in the same position as that other case about two witnesses. You don't know who's going to be with you. You just sat on the bench with three people. You know who they all are. You're now signing after the fact. In the case of the witnesses, they're coming to sign before. That's like they haven't even met each other. So they want to know who's going to be with them before they sign. But in the case of the court signing at the end of the case, it's not a case of not knowing who you're going to be signing with. You know who you're going to be signing with. the two guys that you just discussed the case
right,
with.
Right, that's my point. Namely, there were three. They knew that there were three. There are three judges.
Okay.
So they would sign, because they knew there were three judges.
Okay. So here, in this case, they're always saying, the Gemara is saying like this. Gemara is saying, do we say that there's hazaka that two witnesses wouldn't sign on a document if they knew it wasn't going to be valid? Two witnesses wouldn't sign on a bait and say that they were a bait din if they knew that. And therefore, we can assume it was a valid bait din. Therefore, this document is a valid document. Says we, the court, we, judge so-and-so. Or do we assume that it was actually just two witnesses signing? There wasn't a third. It's two guys and they thought they could decide together. We decided that Plonny owed the money to Plonny. Right? And they use the language of a court. But the truth is, there wasn't a court. There was only two of them. Gara then says that maybe they held like Shmuel, that we learned at the beginning of the Masechet, that Shmuel holds that a Beit Din of two that decide a judgment. The judgment is valid, but it's called a Beit Din Chatzuf. It's an insolent court, but it's still valid, but you have it after the fact. Maybe it was a Beit Din of two in the end. You know, maybe that's what actually happened. It wasn't three. And what's the difference? The difference is we don't hold by Shmuel. So if it was really a Beit Din of two, like Shmuel said there could be, so it wouldn't be a valid document because we don't hold by that way. You're right, Shmuel said it's fine, but halacha is it's not. So we wouldn't allow that document if it really did follow Shmuel. So at the end, the Gemara says, maybe what happens if it was the Gemara wants to find out the law. So the Gemara then poses a different question. Okay, but if it was in the Beit Din of Rav Ashi, for sure the Beit Din of Rav Ashi would never have allowed a two-man Beit Din. So the Gemara says at the end of the sugya that we finished yesterday, it says, and if it had told, and even if you're not sure if it was in the Beit Din of Rav Ashi, if it said on the document, the Katav Aleha, and it was written on it, Katav Bo, Va'amar Lan Rabbanan Ashi, and Rav Ashi told us to write it. So you're right, not only was it in the Beit Din of Rav Ashi, in one of his courtrooms, but it was Rav Ashi himself, Gadol Ador, who said to write the note. In that case, we can assume that for sure he wouldn't have followed Shmuel because he knows what the halacha is. And therefore, it wasn't a two-man Beit Din being chatzuf. And therefore, we will go with with Reish Lakish's chazaka that two people don't sign on a document they know to be invalid. And therefore, it must have been a valid document and a three-man Beit Din at the end of that. Now, I just wanted to bring up at the end of that, before we move on to the next sugya, the Rashi. Rashi, in the thin lines, the beginning of the thin lines, actually starts at the end of the Lamed, on top of Lamed, five lines down, at the end of the wide lines of Rashi at the top of the page. Dibora Matzchil, Ramalacha Rabbana Ashi. And if it said Rav Ashi told you to write it in the document, so the beginning yet doesn't really bother. I'm not really bothered. I want to skip down a little bit. Right, if you go down into the thin lines, the first thin line on the Rashi, you with me? Yeah, no, on Lamed Amud Aleph. Lamed Aleph, first thin line on the Rashi. Right, six lines down from the top of the page. The height in a cat Rav Ashi. Right? And this, that they chose Rav Ashi. Why did they choose Rav Ashi in order to make the point about having a document that was signed by Rav Ashi? Who cares? It could be signed by anyone. Why specifically Rav Ashi? Bahai Rav Ashi, din akat, that you chose Rav Ashi. Lefi, because Shebeit Dino Haya Rosh. Yeah? You with it? No? The fact that we chose Rav Ashi in order to be the example, right? Why was that? The fisha beit dino haya rosh, because his beit din was the head the top one, B'yimei Ravina, in the days of Ravina. But Shnehem and the two of them, Rav Ashi and Ravina, Sidru Gemara, they put together the Gemara, Shel Talmud Bavli, of Talmud Bavli, Kadjurim Ahatam, like it says over there, it brings the place in the Gemara later on. Rav Ashi and Ravina, Sof Hora'ah, Rav Ashi and Ravina were the end of the instructors, if you like. Ubiyamav, and in their day, Na'amu Dvarim Halalu, these words were said, Behogva'u Begamara, and they fixed it into the Gemara. So here we have a Rashi explaining that the Gemara is fixed together by Ravina and Rav Ashi. Tov. Good to know. Rashi. Now, consider. Tov. Back into the Gemara itself. Tnu Rabbanan. We're taught in a brighter. Amalahen Echad. If someone told him, we're going to see who's the him. The him, is the son of a deceased individual. Someone dies and leaves a son, right? And he's the heir to the money that his father left. What happens? Someone tells him, Ani ra'iti avichem. I saw your father. So he told them, the sons, right? Sons plural. I saw your father. Hit min ma'ot. He hid money. Bashida teva umigdal. In a carriage, in a trunk, or in a closet. Rama shal plonihen. And he said to me that it belonged to Ploni. The money belonged to Ploni. Shall Maser Sheni hen. Or this is alternatively, or it's Maser Sheni. It's not Maser Sheni that belongs to someone else. Right, it belonged to Ploni, or it was Maser Sheni. Right, there are two different options. Right, so let's just get the picture. Some third party said, your father left money in a certain place, and that money belongs to Ploni, or that money is Maser Sheni. Now, there's two options. But by it, if it's in the house, if he left money in the house, la ma klum, he didn't say anything, we discount his words. Basadeh dvarim kiyamin. But if he said that the money was in the field, under a tree, for example, then his words do stand. Why? So the Gemara is going to explain what the difference is between the money being in a field, the money being in the house. He said the same thing.
Expect a person to leave the money in the house and not bury it in the field. Maybe.
Yeah, but in both cases, we actually found the money. Right? People came along and said, he left $100 in a box under the bed. And we went to see, oh, you're right, there was $100 in the box under the bed. Or there's $100 in a box under that tree. And we dug it up, and yeah, you're right, there's $100, right? So now what do we do with the money? Do we believe them according to that they said, well, I know where the money was, and therefore I must be believed to know who it belongs to. So klalo shel davar, the rule of the matter, kol shebiyado litlan, anything which is in his hands to take, devarav kiyamin, we believe him, his words stand. Ein biyado litlan lo maklum, but if it's not in his hands, then no. Why? So we believe him when he says it's in the field, because he could have taken it. But we don't believe him when he said it's in the house, under the behind the picture, on the, right in the wall safe, right? Because the witness couldn't have taken that money. But he could have taken the money in the field. So if it was in his hands to take, we believe him. Why? Because if he says it belongs to so-and-so, so we believe it belongs to so-and-so. He could have taken the money himself. He could have taken the money and given it to so-and-so. He could have done anything with it. But when it's in the house, how do we know it belongs to so-and-so? Maybe that's his friend. Maybe he's got a deal going, right? And the reason why he's saying it now is because he couldn't get his hands on it, but now he knows there's some money in a box under the bed. He's just lying. He's trying to get the money. So we don't believe him in that situation. Okay?
My question is, it's only one witness, right?
It's only what?
Only one witness.
No, we're talking about two witnesses.
Does it say whether one or two witnesses?
It doesn't, but it has to be two, because one witness...
exactly, that's my point.
Nachon. So very good, well pointed out, well spotted. Has to be two witnesses that are talking. Here, it seems to me, although I have a problem with it, which is why I didn't mention it, it seems to me that according to the wording of the Braita, we're not talking about the witness who said he saw the father do it. We're talking about the sons. We don't believe them. Seems to me from the wording of the Braita, someone came along and told the sons, the money in the closet belongs to Plony. They come to court, they want to testify that the money in the closet belongs to Plony. Why? Because we were told that. But we don't believe them. I'm not sure that's the case. It's hard to, because either way...
Why would they go to court?
Right.
When if they found the money in the house, they would assume it's the father's.
No, so maybe it is the witness. Maybe it is the witness. You're right. It is the witness, but it seems to be only one witness, and it must be that there were two.
Right. That's why I'm confused. That's why I brought it up.
He brings later on that there must be two, but that's the other case.
You can only have one witness, is enough.
No.
Right. You go and make it alone. So you take one witness.
No, it's
enough.
No,
it
would need two
has
witnesses.
Be two.
No. Yeah. Hold on. Let me see. There's somewhere here. So. If you look in 8, footnote 8, 5-6 lines down, the testimony of a single witness is insufficient in monetary matters.
Right.
It's not one wouldn't be enough. So there must be two. So here, he doesn't explain why there must be two, what's going on. Oh, I see. So what's going on here? He's not believed. What's the difference? The difference is I don't know. But we do believe, I don't know how it works, we do believe him if he said it was in the field. Even though there's only one of him? Not clear. See the Rashi?
This makes no sense at all.
So according to Rashi, we're talking about one person. There's only one. It could be, but there's no way that says that.
One of the witnesses said.
Yeah, so why do we believe one?
We believe what he said. You don't necessarily believe what that has nothing to do with.
It's where it stands.
Depends what the second one says.
But then it's not chiddush. If you have two witnesses who say something, we believe that.
We want to understand what we can accept from a witness in that.
From a witness.
A witness. The witness comes.
Yeah, but in all the other cases, we brought two witnesses. Said two witnesses were behind the curtain. Two witnesses overheard him say A to B. And here we've gone to one witness.
But we haven't given the stack yet. We just believe it's one witness what he says.
And what's much? So what?
Huh?
Doesn't mean anything unless there's two of them.
Yeah, I know, but if one of them says this, we can continue with the case. That's it. If he said the other thing, then we throw it right out. We don't believe
him. I hear. So why not? So why not bring? Why not bring the same thing with two witnesses?
Why not bring the same thing with two? Then we definitely believe him.
But then, we know. Here we're left in with the safek. Maybe a small safek. You say no, it's obvious. But here we're left with the safek. Why one and not two? But if there has to be reason why you would bring it to one, because the two is the clear case, and the two is the ones we've had in the previous sugyas. So there has to be reason to drop the two and bring only one.
But there's a case where one witness says Plony lend the other person money on Sunday, and then a second witness said Plony lend money on Monday.
Right.
The same person. And
okay.
So given the different dates, we can't believe we don't have valid testimony.
Nahum, but we still need to combine the two of them to try and get one set of witnessing.
Right.
Right. But here.
But now we only have one witness.
Right. Therefore.
We can't do anything.
Nahon. So that's why it's.
So this
appears
is why
to be a problem.
Confused.
When Plony comes in, you only want to have a check. So he's not like a witness.
I don't know. I don't know what the law is. From reading this sugya, I'm no wiser as to whether or not one is allowed or not.
When you learn the Kotir Halachot, it was always talking about witnesses. There's only one witness. In Plony. Let's say Shimon borrowed Levi money.
Yeah.
So Levi needs one witness.
No. No.
What about?
Shouldn't be. Mama shouldn't be. Two witnesses. Even in monetary matters, you need two. Says Nachon here, the testimony of a single witness is insufficient in monetary matters. Says clearly. The Rashi and the Ran. Tob, I have to look in. Let's look. He brings Rashi, but I don't see where Rashi says that. But he. I have to look in the Bezat Hashem, look in the Shulchan Aruch, see where it paskins here on this section. Hold on, let's see if there's a footnote to the Shulchan Aruch that we can then look across and see what the rule is.
The next thing that's going to read.
Yeah, the next case. Right.
It's plural.
That's plural.
But afterwards it says one, changes it to the singular.
Well, in the case where they saw Amar Shel Plony Hem.
The Amar, Shel Plony Hem. Amar, one. So now he's coming into the singular.
Well.
It says first two, it says Rabu, plural. And then he says, the Amar Shel Plony Hem.
Ah, Nachon.
Very
Nachon. You're right.
That's strange.
Yeah, I hear.
Then it goes back to the next haray. Shayam is the Shaniach Lo of the Yid.
It's an interesting question.
The other question I have is, why are they mentioning Meister Sheni?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Because isn't... You redeem Meister Sheni onto a coin, right?
Yeah.
And then bring the coin to Yerushalayim.
Okay.
For redemption.
Okay.
So why are they saying that he hid Meister Sheni? Are you talking about the actual vegetables?
No, the money. It means that he redeemed it.
Right.
Put it onto Meister Sheni, but never got to come to Jerusalem before he died.
Right.
So the money sitting there in the closet is Meister Sheni. So you need. Do I believe him and have to take it to Jerusalem and spend it, or can I say no? It's just some money. I don't have to believe you. I can just use it to go shopping.
Okay. So we're talking about all these cases are money hidden.
These ones, yeah, in this sugya, yeah. It doesn't have to be money, it could be anything. That watch in the closet, that belongs to Fred. Right, it could be. Right, so do we believe that it belongs to Fred?
Well, normally a single witness isn't believed, because you need two witnesses.
So that's what we're stuck on.
Right, exactly.
Tov. All right, so Bezat Hashem. We will try and find an answer. Maybe.
And Rashi said nothing.
Not on this, but Rashi uses a singular. Right? Rashi says, "Besadeh devarav kayamin." In the field, his words stand. The malo l'shaker. because what has he got a life for? In what sen notlin, if he wants to take it, noten lo oto shehu, and give it to that person who he said, meyid alav, that he said about him. He's a light white, so we believe him. Why would he lie if he could just take it and give it to the same guy anyway? Right, so he's got no reason to lie, so we believe him. So maybe, so I'm now back with Rav Avraham's shita here, that we are talking about two. It's whether or not we believe his words. So even if there are two, you still need two to witness. But do we believe their words? We're not talking about here whether the testimony is binding. We're talking about whether or not we believe that he's telling the truth or not. How do I know if an individual is telling the truth? If it's a case where that individual could have done something, taken it somewhere like, then we believe him. But if it's in a case where he couldn't, then we don't believe him. We don't believe him. Whether or not it's enough for the testimony, so that's a different thing. So, okay, that's why I think down the bit in this case. Okay, next.
Because they examine each witness individually, right?
So they would testify in the singular. He would say. They wouldn't say together. True, they wouldn't say together. But you wouldn't need to have two of them. Harishya ra'u et avihem. Okay. There were those that saw their father, right? Now we're talking about the sons themselves. We're not talking about the people who told the sons that they saw. We're talking about the sons themselves, right? The people who would have got the money. So it's a different thing. The person who's testifying in the first case is not shy after the money. But the people who are testifying now, it's otherwise their money. Right? So they saw their father, Ra'u'eta Vihem, they saw their father, Shed Min Ma'ot, Bashida, Teva, Ummaitav. This time it's them that saw their father hide money in the carriage, the trunk, or the closet. Rama, and he said, the father said to them, this is Shel Ploni, belongs to Ploni. My sons, you see this money I'm putting in the safe? This belongs to Ploni. Shel Masa Sheni him, or he told them, you know this money? This is Masa Sheni money, don't touch it. I'm taking this to Jerusalem. Now, what do we say about that? What's the law? Do we believe that that's actually the case? Well, here we've got a different cheshbon, a different thing. Here, the sons could have taken the money because they live in the house, maybe. So it's not the same as an outsider who saw it and then couldn't do anything about it. Plus, here, the money is coming to them. So if they say that the money belongs to Ploni, or if they say the money is Master Shani, again, so they're going against their own best interest, so to speak. And therefore, we could technically have grounds to believe them. So the Gemara says there's a different cheshbon. Im kamoser, if he gave it over, the Gemara explains here, the footnote explains here, like instructions. Not the Gemara, the footnote I've got. The footnote says moser means to give over. If he was telling them instructions, guys, this money here is Master Shani, don't touch it. If he told them in the way of instruction, Devarav Kayamin, his words stand. We believe the father when he said it was Master Shani. Ve'im kema'arim, but if he seemed to be deceiving them, this is a bit more difficult to understand why you were going to bring this Gemara, but if he seemed to be deceiving them, Lama Klum, we say that his words don't stand. He didn't say anything. What does it mean he appears to be deceiving them? So let's see the Rashi's. Rashi say, Im kamoser, if it appeared to be that he was giving them, telling them over, what does it mean? Im nire lahem kamosa devarav levanav. No, devarav. Devarav meaning his words. Kamoser devarav. You could say his thing, but he's not. But you couldn't be. You couldn't be giving them to them by saying, this belongs to someone else. This belongs to Master Shani. So it must be that he's handing over the words as instructed to his children. Be'emet, in truth, belashon sava'ah, in a way of command, a way of instruction.
So
is
that also a will.
In the way, it depends on his intention. If he was saying, my sons, this money over here, putting in, you should know, it's not going to be part of the inheritance, it actually belongs to someone else. So that makes sense. Kamarim, what's kamarim? Deceiving. Shehu mitcharer, Shelo yitlam v'chayav. He was scared not to give it to them in his life. Or shelo yechazikuhu kashir, or that he wouldn't have a chazaka, he wouldn't be assumed to be rich. Rasif al yitziotav, to increase his expenses. Right, that people will charge more people when you appear to be rich. So what's he saying? How did he say it? You're right. Abba said the money in the closet was Master Shani. Did he say that really because he just didn't want to suspend it? Or he wanted people not to think he's rich. There's $100,000 in the safe. Yeah, but it belongs to Plony. It's not ours. Right? He didn't want to appear to be rich. Right? You never hear the end of the request for a new car. Right? Or whatever. Right? So,
or worse.
Right? So you're right. He said it. So there's a dispute. He said it, but we didn't believe him.
Why when Plony said he owed me money, $100,000? That's right.
Who? Which case?
The father said, this money belongs to Plony.
Okay.
So the children listen. And then after the Plony come, say, your father owed me money.
Yeah.
So they ask how much. It's exact sum.
Right. So they go to court, and then the court say, what did your father say about this money? And they're on the witness stand. They said, well, actually, he said it belonged to Plony. So then it comes back to this. How did he say it? Did he say it in the way that it was actually, he really meant it? I don't know. That's what they have to work out. If they're lying, they're not lying. They could lie, for sure. Right? But if everyone's telling the truth and we're just trying to get to the halacha, then that's a halacha. Depends on what he meant when he said it.
But
we don't just take his words at face value.
This is assuming we don't have a shtar.
A shtar?
Right, a document.
Yeah, if we don't, in the absence of any other evidence.
Because I would assume that the father would be deceiving them because they're not mature enough to deal with their money.
So that's the first one, that he doesn't want to give them the money in his lifetime.
Right.
Right, that's the first Rashi. Rashi says he was lying to them because he doesn't want to give them the money. Yeah, I had a friend in law school. Told me that his father had made a trust for him, put £1 million, which was quite a lot of money in those days, 20 years ago, when I was in law school, in a trust fund, but he wasn't allowed to touch it until he was 26. We were like 20, 21. And he knew he was coming at 26. He was taking it easy. I mean, he didn't get it then, but he had to wait at least for that. Anyway,
tough. That's quite common. 25, 26.
Tough. Anyway, tough. Where are we? So that was that. Next, brighter. Third brighter. Hareisha haya mitzta'er al ma'ot. There was a case of a person who was troubled, mitzta'er al ma'ot, about money. Sheniach lo aviv, that his father left him. Right? He was... Here he was troubled about money. This fight we're going to see. Interesting cases. Uba bal chalom, and came to him the bal chalom, the bal chalom, the master of dreams. The master of dreams came to him. This is the Gemara. The master of dreams came to this individual and said to him, "Kach v'kach hen, this is the amount of money for Matom Ploni the Ploni, and it's in a certain place." Right, and it was right.
Story.
Oh, he's under the bridge.
So he go to
under the bridge. Nachon.
Yeah.
Right. So the master of dreams came and told him there's such a this certain amount of money in a certain place, and it was there. Bashel Master Shani hen, but it belongs to Master Shani. Right. So that's what he dreamt. Vazer Yamase, and this was what happened. Right, he went and looked in that place, and there was exactly that amount of money. So what do I do now? Do I now understand that was correct, so that it actually is Master Shani? Right, that bit's correct. I believe the Master of Dreams. What do I do? I know what to do. So you go to your Rav and say, Rav, I just had a dream, and it was an exact amount of money in that place, but in the dream they said it was Master Shani. Is it? Or can I have it? You say, of course. Gemara says no. Gemara says, Va'amru, and they said about this, Divrei Chalomot Lo Ma'alin V'Lo Moridin. Words in a dream don't, it depends how you understand that, we'll see the Rashi, don't go up and don't go down. They don't increase for you, they don't take away from you. Meaning, you don't have to, the words of money can't cause you to give away money or to get money from someone else. You know, in this case, in the case of money.
So you believe the dream that there's money. So you go to this place, you give everything. Uh-huh. Then yeah. Money is there, but yeah. The other hand says, uh-huh. There's
another one. We don't have to believe it to actually, in terms of the ownership.
Uh-huh. Where is the Art Scroll?
That's the Psak.
The Art Scroll says that the contents of the dreams are irrelevant. Namely, if you find the money because of the dream, it's yours.
Nahon. But you don't have to. It's interesting, right? You don't have to listen to the dream, the Bala Chalom, in terms of then acting accordingly. Meaning, you don't have to go and look for the money. Right? You chose to do it. You can choose, but it's not binding halachically on you. If you want to give that money to Master Sheni, very nice. But you don't have to. It's not halachically binding. If you don't, you haven't broken the halacha. It doesn't belong to someone. It doesn't belong to Ploni. It doesn't belong to Master. Just because the Baal HaCholam told you it was.
Good to know.
Huh?
Good to know. Good to know. Well, give it away.
It might be wise to do so. Doesn't say. Let's see if there's a rush.
I mean, what is the halakha dealing with Master Sheni if you die?
Still Master Sheni.
It's still Master Sheni.
Yeah.
Master Sheni. So yeah. Then the heirs have to take care of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They have to go and take it to Jerusalem. Spend it in Jerusalem. So, just the Rashi's on that. Baal HaChalom. Who's the Baal HaChalom? Who's the master of dreams? Sar. He's a minister. Shemareh Chalomot Balaila. That shows you dreams at night time. A minister in charge of dreams. Now you know who he is. He's not the dream fairy. He's not the, I don't know what they are. The BFG, if anyone read Roald Dahl.
Is what, will it?
The BFG.
What is that?
It's Tov. It's a Roald Dahl story. Anyway, Tov.
So he's more effective than the Ministry of Education or Lapid?
No, this one you don't have to listen to. So, Lo Ma'alim, etc. V'yachol Lohotziem Bimkomam. He can. I know what that means. Lohotziem Bimkomam. He can take them out of their place. I don't understand that. Yeah, but that wasn't the question, really, whether he can take the money out from it. I mean, here, Nachon, Ve'yachol lahotziyam bimkoman. He can take them out from their place. That wasn't really the question. Rashi seems to be answering a different question. We want to know, can he spend it? He says, imagine he can take it out of its place. Yofi, so. That's what it means, but it's interesting Lashon of Rashi here. Don't know. I don't know what Rashi's coming to say. He's coming to say something, but I don't know what he's coming to say. So here, interestingly, in the footnote, we learn, it says that the reason why we don't have to, one of the reasons anyway, why we don't have to believe that it's Master Sheni is because we learned in Masechta Brachot, as we'll all remember, on Daf 55a, that all dreams, certainly for us, contain within them elements of untruth.
Untruth.
All dreams contain within them elements of untruth, and therefore we don't know that this bit is true. And because we don't know if that bit is true, you're right, the rest of it was true. We don't know if that bit was true.
A better translation would probably be fantasy.
Untrue. We don't know if some of it's true and some it's not true. Even if you're told truth in a dream, We don't know which bits are and which bits aren't. And therefore, because you don't know which, you don't know, you can't rely on that.
Okay,
except,
therefore,
you don't have to, because it's just like someone comes along with testimony and says, that money in that closet that you found, if there's a doubt about whether he's telling the truth, he's got an interest, maybe it's his friend, maybe I don't have to believe him. Maybe he's telling the truth and it does belong to Colombia, but I don't have to believe him. So just like I don't have to believe him, I don't have to believe him either, because it's not... If there were also there were parts which are untrue, and therefore I don't have to accept that bit is also true. Tough. Interesting. Okay. I think we'll start there, because the next bit goes back to the new Mishnah, back to the next bit of the Mishnah. Okay.